The Deadbolt Mystery Society presents The Warwick Recordings, a story about secrets and how they are uncovered in a strange neighborhood in an even stranger town.
Hello, listeners, fans, or whoever you might be that has stumbled onto these recordings. Knox Carter here with the 6th Warwick Recording. In my last entry, I told you about tracking down the Falks, who were the previous owners of my home. Becky Falk told me to find the book, The Secret of Owls, in my library. After arriving back at home, I raced immediately into the library to look for the book. It wasn't a real book. The spine of The Secret of Owls was maroon with gold gilding. It was also wooden to the touch and painted, not printed. When I pulled it off the shelf, I found an iron ring set in the wall behind where the fake book had been. I pulled the ring and heard the subtle groan of machinery and grinding gears from the wall behind the bookcase. A section of the bookcase popped open, showing me a door where I never imagined one might be found. It took my eyes a moment to adjust to the gloom, but when they finally did, they saw a staircase descending into the earth. Was there a secret basement I didn't know about? Where did it lead? I knew there was only one way to find out. I pulled out my phone and activated the flashlight app before descending into darkness, fully aware that this was the exact path the intruder had taken the previous evening. It had to be. It would explain how they disappeared without a trace. It bothered me that someone knew certain secrets about my home that I wasn't privy to. What if there were more hidden corridors that would allow anyone with the right knowledge to openly access my home? I would never feel safe in a place like this. The stairs were covered in a thin layer of dust. They descended into the earth a good 15 feet and ended in a small antechamber that connected to a long hallway. The walls of the passage had been reinforced with steel and concrete, and because of that, it was obvious that someone had gone to great lengths to put all this in place. Bare bulbs hung at regular intervals along the corridor, but none of them were illuminated. I assumed that there was a switch somewhere that would activate them, but I had no idea where it would be. I continued to wander in the darkness, led only by the meager light from my phone. As I traveled the hallway, I fully expected someone or something to jump out and grab me at any moment. I'm not normally easily frightened, but something about the strangeness of the situation made me uneasy in ways I couldn't really describe. These tunnels had been built with foresight and purpose. Others knew about these tunnels and knew how to use them. As I walked along the corridor, stooping slightly to avoid hitting my head on the stone ceiling, a thought occurred to me. Unless you knew in my library where to look, you would never have known that a door leading somewhere else was there. What if there were similar doors down here? Maybe I already passed one. Maybe the person who left the eyeball outside my bedroom door could access this tunnel from another doorway someplace further back and sneak up behind me. If that were the case, the knife would be at my throat before I even had a chance to breathe. I knew I had to be careful. Of course, if they wanted me dead, they could have killed me the night before. At the moment, I think they were just toying with me. Jerks. I was vaguely aware of moving in a western direction, which made me think the hallway I was traveling ran parallel with the street. I explored the hallway carefully for a couple of minutes, unable to turn right or left, only able to venture forward. The hallway made a 90-degree turn, and I was able to spot a light at the end of the corridor. Someone or something was up ahead. Possibly the intruder that had broken into my home and left me a gift-wrapped eyeball. The air down here felt cool and moist and smelled like the earth. It reminded me of being a teenager when I helped my dad do yard work by putting down topsoil and peat moss. I remember the rich, heady scent of the landscaping materials as I tore open bag after bag and dumped them out into the flower beds around our house. There was something else, an undercurrent of sandalwood. I stopped at the end of the tunnel and cautiously peered into the doorway of the room the light was emanating from. convinced I had located the domain of the Owl King. The best I could tell, the room was a hub of sorts. A series of other hallways led to it like spokes on a wheel. I had no idea where the other hallways led, but based on what Becky Falk told me, I suspected that they led to the homes of the other neighbors. Nicholas Falk had been attacked by a group of intruders. It just made sense that they had all descended down into this place from their own respective homes and taken the hallway leading up to the Falk home. It's easy to sneak up on someone when you know how to access the secret door leading right up to their living room. Of course, the reason I focused on the doorways first is because it meant that I didn't have to focus on the rest of the room. Yet, it was difficult not to study everything else in great detail, no matter how horrifying it was. There must have been 20 or 30 sandalwood-scented candles burning in a semicircle at the end of the room. It was the only wall of the room that didn't open onto one of the hallways. The wall was built of cinder blocks and provided a stark backdrop to one of the most horrifying displays I'd ever seen. The figure in front of the wall was an owl-like creature that stood about 7 feet tall. I couldn't tell if what I was seeing was a suit of some sort that would transform the wearer into some hideous human-owl hybrid, or if it was a mannequin, meant to be revered and worshipped like a totem. The Owl King simply stood there, mighty wings outstretched, talons poised to rip apart its prey. Standing on sturdy feathered legs that ended in feet that somehow inexplicably had talons every bit as threatening as the ones on the hands of the creature. The Owl King's golden eyes stared straight ahead. But I couldn't get rid of the idea that it was watching me, waiting for me to make the wrong move, whereby it would step down off the pedestal and tear me limb from limb with those vicious claws. Its feathers were an earthy brown with some darker markings that weren't quite black, but were very close. On the wall behind the Owl King were cryptic writings, markings, symbols, and numbers. I had no idea what any of it could mean, but I snapped a couple pictures of it all. Offerings of some sort had been placed at the foot of the Owl King. Herbs, flowers, trinkets, coins, and assorted knickknacks. Against a section of that same wall was a pile of clothing, shoes, jewelry, and even a wig. Some of the clothing was obviously designed for a male body, while other articles were clothing decidedly female. I had no idea what any of it meant. In the center of the room stood a stone altar stained black with something I assumed to be blood. I remembered what Becky Falk had said about Moloch, a god that demanded human sacrifice. Suddenly, the pile of clothing took on a whole different meaning for me. How many victims had met their fate down here in these tunnels? Would I be next? I was in the middle of looking around a bit more when the hallways leading to the Owl King all lit up simultaneously. Someone was probably on their way here right this very moment. I couldn't allow myself to be seen. Unsure of what I had stumbled onto, I used my phone to snap a few additional photos and then hurried back down the hallway leading to my house. The journey seemed to take a couple minutes this time, even though it had seemed like a half-hour trip on the way over. I didn't have any trouble reaching the steps that led back up to the library. As soon as I was back inside the relative safety of my home, I wasted no time pulling as much junk out of various rooms to pile in front of that section of the bookcase's secret door. I didn't want to be surprised again. Of course, for all I knew, there were other ways into my home, other secret tunnels that might lead to other dark secrets. But there wasn't time to consider any of that. The main thing was to barricade the hidden passage to the point that gaining clandestine access to my home and to me was impossible. Once I felt satisfied with the heap of junk I stacked in front of the bookcase, I sat down in a moth-eaten chair that the Falks had left behind. I tried to think of what my next move should be, and at last I settled on examining the strange numbers I'd found on the back of the board that I discovered in the wall of my bedroom. You know, the numbers I'd been led to by an imaginary murder victim from my dreams. Anyway, it didn't take long for me to find out the significance of the numbers. I simply typed both numbers into Google, and with the quick click of a button, the maps function of the website identified them as GPS coordinates. When I searched for the directions to those coordinates, I was shocked to see that the destination in question was only about a mile from where I lived. I was at the site in less than 10 minutes and was surprised by what I found, or didn't find, as it turned out. The lot was mostly vacant. At some point, a business of some kind might have sat there. But if that was ever true, the remains of said business had long since been bulldozed down to the foundations and buried in the earth, leaving only a scar-pocked section of land that was dotted with irregularly spaced patches of daisies and daylilies. I double-checked my phone to make sure I had the coordinates typed in correctly. I even referred back to my photo of the numbers on the back of the board and compared what I saw with the GPS coordinates. Everything appeared to be correct. Over time, piles of trash had accumulated there. More than likely, people needing to empty their cars had thrown more than a few bottles and fast food wrappers out their windows. The occasional vagrant probably set up their tent there too. It wouldn't have even surprised me to find out that this was some sort of lover's lane type of spot at some point in time, which made me ill to think of what might be hiding in the garbage piles. Everything I saw added up to only one thing. It was a dead end. The message I had gotten in my dream had coincidentally turned up something that my mind interpreted as actually useful but was nothing more than junk. I had made correlations where there weren't any, and I had ventured all the way out there in search of answers. In hopes that I never had to come back to that site for anything else, I took a few snapshots of the lot with my phone and headed home, a little dejected that I hadn't discovered anything monumental. It was early afternoon when I got back, but to my internal clock, it felt more like 3 in the morning. I was exhausted from a night of bad sleep and stressing over the possibility of someone sneaking into my house and slitting my throat while I dozed. It only took a minute of resting there on the couch before I drifted off to sleep. In this case, it probably wasn't the smartest thing to do, since I knew there had to be someone else down there in the tunnels not that long ago. But my body took what it needed. In my dreams, I beat an owl to death with a claw hammer. No question where the elements of that dream came from. When I woke up, I wasn't sure what time it was. The sun had completely changed positions. It had shone brightly through the east window when I first sat down to rest after barricading the library. After waking, it shone through the window on the other side of the house, having made the transition from rising to falling. I looked at my watch and realized it was after 6 o'clock. I'd been asleep for the majority of the day, it seemed. For a moment, I sat there, still dazed and half asleep. Sure, there was something I was supposed to do. Then, as it finally dawned on me, I jumped up off the couch and ran to the bathroom. I needed a shower. I had a dinner party to go to tonight. When we pick up next time, I'll tell you all about the party and what sorts of strange revelations it led to. Until then, this is Knox Carter for the Warwick Recordings.
The Warwick Recordings are presented by the Deadbolt Mystery Society. Written by Jason Brannan. Edited by David Alderman. Narrated by Glenn Payne. Sound designed and mixed by Glenn Payne. Executive producers Jason Brannan and Sean Brannan. You can support us by reviewing the Warwick Recordings on the platform where you found us and by sharing this podcast with others. If you enjoyed the Warwick Recordings, we think you would also like our puzzle-solving mystery games, which are found at deadboltmysterysociety.com. Thank you for listening. Until next time.